Hey guys, this is TJ Malone here from Penn State. You're listening to the DeFly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the DeFly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Big week ahead as we head into the Easter weekend of lacrosse action, about halfway through the season. We'll look back at a couple midweek games and look ahead to another handful of top 20 marquee matchups and get you all set for those games. Lots to get to. So Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, the Key Bridge collapse. When's the last time you went over the Key Bridge?
It's been a while. I don't use it that much. I do have, for my real job, I do have accounts over in that eastern Baltimore County. But I, you know, where I live, I use the tunnels for the most part. And then, of course, I have business down on the Eastern Shore, so the Bay Bridge. So I don't use I didn't use the Key Bridge often. God, I'd have to say it's been like 2 or 3 years since I've used the Key Bridge. But obviously a mainstay in this area. And wow, that was some crazy news to wake up to a couple of days ago.
Absolutely. The video is just astounding to see it fall apart like that. Did you have any people reach out to you?
I did.
From outside of town, kind of like.
Yeah, I did. And it was nice of them. But you're figuring it happened 1:30 in the morning. So if I'm anywhere near the Key Bridge at 1:30 in the morning on a weeknight, probably up to no good. But I did have coworkers from different areas of the country and friends, you know, reach out being like, hey, you cool? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, it was wild. I think people were really taken aback by the fact that when the cargo ship hit that one spot on the bridge, the entire thing went. But the morning of the tragedy, I was listening to WBAL, love C4 and Brian Neiman, listen to them every morning. And they had I believe it was a professor from Hopkins who has a background in that, an engineering background. And she said that the way that bridge was constructed back in 1977, so the bridge is 47 years old, it's a triple span bridge or a triple spire bridge, meaning there's three key components to the structure. And if you hit one of them, the whole thing goes down. So that is, oh man, that was wild. And I tell you what, the folks, the boots on the ground, that I guess when they realized there was going to be impact, they had 90 seconds to stop traffic.
And they did.
And they did. There was one car. Apparently there was one car that ignored them and went through, and apparently that thing was hauling, you know what, to get across, and made it, fortunately for that vehicle. But you know, obviously some life has been lost, and just a really tough situation for this area.
Yeah, for sure. You can see that car in the video of the boat crash. You can see some headlights fly across the bridge before the impact. Yeah, it's same. I had people reach out to me just saying, like, what is the impact of it? And, you know, most traffic going up and down I-95 go through the tunnels or on the west side of 695 Beltway, around like through Towson and that side of, you know, the west side of Baltimore City. This is more local traffic. I don't think I've been over the Key Bridge since I went to like a crab house. It might have been a decade ago. Over in that neck of the woods, but it's in crucial for the business of the Port of Baltimore. You know, just the amount of traffic that goes in and out of that, not only for, you know, hauling stuff, because you can't take hazardous stuff through the tunnel,
right?
So you got to go on mostly the Key Bridge to do that. So that's a big route for shipping, and then also literally the boats, the ships that come in and out of the Port of Baltimore, how long those will be down. That's a huge economic driver for the city. And there's a lot of people's livelihoods at stake there. So, you know, it's a tragedy, obviously, for the men the workers that were on the bridge, but also, you know, the long-term implications are going to be significant for Baltimore, for sure.
It depends on what you, stat you look at. I saw something that said the Port of Baltimore is the 11th busiest in the country. I've seen some stats where it says it's as important as the 8th or 9th busiest port in the country. Right now, the harbor is blocked, which they have to clear that. And then also Amazon is on the other side of the river. So, and that is a major economic force in this area. And then just the traffic situation for the foreseeable future is going to be greatly impacted. So, I mean, you talk about tens of billions of dollars annually that flow through the port. I tell you one thing that was wild is I got one of the most underrated seasons in The Wire is season 2, where it focused on the shipping industry.
For sure.
Frank Zabatka. I'm not hearing the name Frank Zabatka in this investigation. Was that Valchek, the old crotchety police chief? But the images of Zabatka looking at sitting under the shadow of the Key Bridge and commenting on that area, you know, really speaks to the impact that it has on this area.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about some lacrosse. Let's change to more pleasant topics.
Yeah.
But I want to start with a couple of things that officiating wise that happened last week in some games. So there was two things. One was Caleb Hammond of UMass, a faceoff guy, was using something, you know, stick, messing with a stick. A goal was disallowed. Brown comes back, wins their first game of the season for the Brown Bears. That one. And then there's some more goal mouth discussion. And I'll turn it over to our resident lacrosse official to go into more depth on those two things.
Yeah. So we got some correspondence asking to us to clarify some of these situations. So in the UMass Brown game, when a stick check is requested, so I'm assuming that Brown's head coach, Mike Daly, asked for a stick check after the goal from the UMass Fogo. And let's address something right now. They say it's an unwritten rule that you don't check faceoff men's stick. That is, if that exists, throw it out the window, because if anybody's ever using an illegal piece of equipment, it's fair game. I equate that to when I played old man lacrosse in the 35 and over, and teams would have guys that were younger than 35. And I specifically remember a tournament. It was Ocean City. And this one team, and I wasn't playing in this game. I was just in the area. I guess we were in between games. And it was obvious that one team had a bunch of young guys. And the other team was like, hey, can we see your roster? Can we see driver's licenses? And the reaction from the team that was cheating was, don't you have anything better to do than check our ages? It's like, well, don't you have anything better to do than not cheat and old man's lacrosse? There are divisions for you to play, you know? So anyway, goal was scored. And when a stick check is requested and referee says, and I haven't seen the live video of this, I've only seen like little snippets. When an official asks for your stick, you cannot touch your stick. Meaning you can't pull the strings to adjust your pocket. You can't grab the insides of the head and pull them apart to increase the width. You can't touch it. You have to hand it to the official. So I believe that when the officials asked for the stick, the faceoff man for UMass tried to stretch, I guess, did something to the stick. And right then and there, it's a 1 minute non-releasable penalty. And I believe that's what happened. But the officials, I guess it looked like they went through the rest of the check, and I guess everything else was legal. But the fact that the player did manipulate or you know, do that action, that was what precipitated the flag. When it comes to the goal mouth, so Justin Tiernan of Michigan scored what proved to be the game winner against Maryland on national television. Joe B and I were calling that game, and the referees determined that he was pushed. So there was a flag out, and then Tiernan scores and then landed in the goal mouth. So the first thing is Big Ten doesn't have video review. So the play could not be reviewed. So this is bang, bang. This is live. This is the officials reacting in real time. Because Tiernan, a flag was thrown, therefore a foul was committed, and he landed in the goal mouth as a result of that foul. That's why the goal was good. And he could land in the goal mouth because he was put there illegally. A lot of folks were up in arms saying that, what about when Michael Leo scored in overtime against Maryland? That goal was disallowed. He landed in the goal mouth and he was pushed. No, he was not pushed because, if you remember, there were no flags. There was not a flag on the play signifying a push. So that's the difference between why the goal for Justin Tiernan was allowed and Michigan won that game. And that is the reason why the goal by Syracuse Michael Leo was disallowed. And that goal was taken off the board, and Maryland ultimately won that game.
So to sum all this up, there has to be a flag down in order to review it at all. And that is the difference of what really decides a call. There has to be a call in order to look at it.
So no, if you recall in the Syracuse Maryland game, they did look at it, even though there wasn't a flag down. What the officials could do in that instance is they could review to see if they missed the call. In other words, was Leo pushed? And they determined he wasn't. He went into the crease and the goal mouth on his own without illegal contact. So okay. That is so they you can still review. Now, if you the other component of review is contact to the head and neck area. If that call on the field is not designated right away as contact to the head and neck area, it cannot be reviewed for head and neck. So, and again, remember head and neck, you can determine severity, whether it's indirect 1 minute, direct 2 minutes, flagrant or excessive 3 minutes. And you can also, so let's say it was called 1 minute on the field, you can escalate it to 2 minutes based on video review. You could also downgrade it and take away the locked in or, you know, whatever the case may be. So that's some of the insight as we move along in this review era of men's lacrosse. Does that all make sense?
It does. It does. Again,
clear as mud.
I'm all for it. clear as mud. I'm all for making the game safer and making sure you get the calls right. So if it takes time and you got to look at things to get things right or to enforce the rules that are there to protect people, I'm all for it. Dix, in midweek action, a lot of games on Wednesday because of spring break, we were treated to some like midday games. And one of significance was Duke slipped by Boston University 11-10. And then also, there's no more undefeated teams in Division I men's lacrosse as Quinnipiac got beat by Manhattan. So any review of these Wednesday games, any takeaways from Mark Dixon?
Yeah, I rewatched, watched the Duke-BU game later. Wow, BU's good. You know, they keep getting better and better and fresh off of their upset victory over Army last week. They followed it up with, a game that they led. For a portion of the contest, and then Duke was able to get the game winner late, but that game was moved up. Actually, it was supposed to be later on that Wednesday afternoon, but because of weather, and the weather wasn't great at all. I mean, it was a pouring rain, and I feel like we've had a lot of those this lacrosse season. But Duke found a way to avoid the upset. I talked to people. I think this is a little harsh. But people are like, look, if Duke doesn't win a national championship this year, you got a clean house with the coaching staff. There's no way that they cannot win a national championship with that roster, with that level of talent. And I'm kind of like, well, that's a little aggressive, but are they not getting the most out of that talent? A lot of people had the pitchforks out when they only scored 4 goals against Syracuse last week at a 10-4 loss in the Dome. But then they rebounded nicely and beat Denver this past weekend at Archbishop Spalding High School, 11-7. And then they turn around and Duke is a kind of team, I think, that is going to get everyone's best effort. But I think that a lot of eyes are on Duke as to whether or not they can pull this through in 2024, get to championship weekend. I don't know. What do you think?
I've seen them play in person against Princeton. They were extremely impressive, but that was coming off of an upset win when Penn beat them. It seems like motivation and consistency is an issue for this team. I do think, I mean, they have 18 grad students. 18. They're backfilling in their roster with a few top recruits, but graduate students, you know, experienced, really good players. They were the preseason favorites to make it, to win the national championship, I think, odds-wise, or at least tied maybe with Notre Dame or Virginia. And some of these results are surprising. Some of the, you know, but at the same time, they're 9-2, and they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. They still have a chance to win the ACC regular season, or be there in the mix. So there's a lot of lacrosse left to play. A lot of lacrosse left to play.
It takes me aback a little bit how folks can be so down on certain programs. I mean, look, Maryland's getting it right now. After their loss to Michigan, which is their third loss in four games, I saw people on social media saying, John Tillman can't coach, he can't recruit, he can't develop, let's get rid of him. And you're like, are you serious? Look at Maryland over the last few years. Look at Team USA. Look at the PLL. Those rosters are dominated by Terps. And you know, to say the same thing about Duke is, I mean, come on. Like, okay, maybe they should have a couple more gold trophies down in Durham, but it is, and John Nowski says this all the time, like, it's hard. It is hard to win in Division I men's lacrosse. The margin between being considered a great coach and a crummy coach is one goal a lot of times. So it's just kind of crazy how lacrosse will eat their own.
And there are a lot of good programs out there, and they're all trying to win. You know, we're going to talk to TJ Malone a little bit from Penn State, and you know, their team's coming off of a run to championship weekend, and they're ranked number 4 in the country, and they're doing all they can to get back to championship weekend and win the whole thing, just like every other program, right? So it is tough. It is tough, and I think Duke will be just fine. They'll be there when it counts. Dix, before we bring in TJ for the interview, you mentioned that Duke got a win over Denver in Severn, Maryland at Archbishop Spalding. Quarterfield Road used to be in Glen Burnie, and I'm pretty sure it still is, but they like to go by Severn. That's fine. But there's one more college lacrosse live event coming up, and it's April 14th, and there's no better way to experience college lacrosse up close and personal than to be a part of the action for Cornell and Notre Dame, two top 10 teams. This is a big time matchup on April 14th. This time it'll be on Long Island. The game will be played at Bethpage Federal Credit Union Stadium on the campus of Long Island University. The Big Red and the Irish will face off at 12:30 p.m. in the third and final event of the College Lacrosse Live Series this season. Tickets are available for adults at $25 and for youth fans ages 12 and under for just $12. Fans can also purchase tickets for a VIP hospitality experience that includes sideline access, great views of the game, food and beverage, and great company. To learn more about the series and to purchase tickets, visit collegelacrosselive.com to get your tickets today. Again, that's collegelacrosselive.com. Get your tickets today. Cornell versus Notre Dame, where lacrosse is up close and personal. All right, Dix, let's bring in TJ Malone from Penn State. A very impressive young man for a great conversation. Our guest today is Penn State All-American attackman TJ Malone. Grad student leads the Nittany Lions in assists and points and will square off against number 12 Maryland Sunday night at 7 p.m. TJ, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
TJ, great to spend some time with you. Before we talk about the current season and Penn State, let's rewind and go back to the end of last season Memorial Day weekend, you guys are in overtime against Duke, and the game ends on a very controversial call. How did the end of last season shape your approach and the team's approach to 2024?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think having that run last year was amazing for our team, just because we instilled a lot of belief, and we've been building this program for a long time. I've been here for 6 years, and we've been building this program for a while, and we've seen great results, and we haven't seen great results, and we've had it all kind of in my time here. So I think we put in so much hard work with our team, with our culture, and it to have that season kind of go the way it did last year was awesome, because it showed that our hard work was paying off. So I think we just needed to get back to that this year and continue to believe in ourselves. And a big part of our team is just we're resilient. We practice resiliency every day. Our coaches put pressure on us at practice, which is awesome. It makes us better, makes us resilient. So when we get into a game, we believe that we're going to win every game. And it doesn't mean it's going to look super pretty every time. Sometimes we're going to come from behind. Other times we're going to get off to a hot start. But I think that mindset and that belief in our team and what we've done to prepare has gotten us to this point, and hopefully will get us over the hump this year. You know, the goal is to get back to that championship weekend and finish the deal, something that no other Penn State team's ever done before.
Your career, you will go down as one of the best in Penn State history, joining names like Grant Amet, Mac O'Keefe, Chris Sabia. But you've had ups and downs in terms of your health at Penn State, where you've missed entire seasons. How has your journey shaped you as a lacrosse player, but also just, you know, as a person, when you think about how far you've come and what you've had to battle against?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm so thankful for everything I've gone through, even though it was really hard, because it's made me a better person. I think so many times we're scared of bad things to happen to us, but it's sometimes the bad things that give us the biggest insights. And I don't think I would be here where I am today without my injuries. I mean, literally, I would not have the extra eligibility without missing the seasons. But I wouldn't be the man I am today without going through that tough time period, going through 3 surgeries in about a 6-month span, and then coming back less than a year later, and helping lead the team to a Final Four. It was just a dream come true. I think I learned so much about myself, and also just learned about how important positive thinking is. I met with our sports performance psychologist at Penn State when I was going through those injuries, and he had me start journaling. And I would always go to him and be like, I can't do this. It hurts. My hips hurt when I even practice. He goes, flip it from what you cannot do to what you can do. So just that positive thinking really allowed me to get through those tough times, and it led me here today, where I still do the same, you know, gratitude practice that he had me do. So things I've learned like that, I would not trade that for the world, because I wouldn't have learned those hard lessons unless I was going through those tough times.
Gratitude practice. I gotta start doing that. So TJ, you coming off the Final Four trip last year, and you guys are probably gung-ho to start this season, and you get knocked off by Colgate. What adjustments did you guys make after the Colgate loss?
Yeah, I don't think we made any adjustments, but it was definitely a kick in the ass, and it was necessary, I think. We had just played really well in our 2 scrimmages, in the Bucknell scrimmage and the Army scrimmage. We were feeling pretty good about ourselves, and I think we forgot that preseason was over. It's now every game here counts. And so I think we needed that little slice of humble pie for our team, just to get us back on the right track. I mean, and realize that we can't take any games off, and every opponent's going to be coming for us. So I think we learned that lesson the hard way. And I think it's going to be a blessing in disguise towards the end of the season, because I think as a Penn State team, we play better when we're coming from behind, and when we're counted out and we're underdogs, we like hunting. So I think a big part of that was everybody. We might be ranked high preseason, but now everybody forgot about us, and now everybody thought we fell off. And I think we enjoy being in that spot, coming from behind. And I think it provides us a lot of motivation. One of the things I shared with our team after that loss was just I'm a big soccer fan. So when Argentina and Messi won the World Cup in the last World Cup, they lost their first game of the tournament, of the World Cup tournament, to Saudi Arabia. And it was statistically one of the biggest upsets in sports history. And they just should not have lost. But then they didn't lose a game for the rest of the year, and they ended up winning the World Cup. So just providing that insight, I think, helped our team stay on track versus hitting the panic button. And so that I think it's gonna be a blessing for us.
That's a great analogy. I had even forgotten that Argentina lost a game in the World Cup because it came down, what was it, Messi and Mbappe was like the battle in the final, right? Incredible. How would you best describe your game, TJ Malone, the lacrosse player, the attackman, the offensive force?
Yeah, honestly, I think a little unconventional. I think I'm not necessarily so when I got to Penn State, I played with two of the all-time greats, Grant Amen and Mac O'Keefe, and they each mastered a skill. Grant was a passer and Mac was a shooter. I think for me, I'm not a master of any skill, but I think I'm pretty good at a lot of different skills. I can feed, I can shoot, I can also dodge pretty well. So I think for me, I'm more of a all-around player, and that also has its setbacks. I mean, I'm not as good as Grant at passing. I'm not as good as Mac at shooting, obviously. So I think for me, that's just kind of the way I played the game growing up. I was a super small kid. My driver's license, they talked about this on the broadcast in the Final Four, but my driver's license when I was 16 says 5'4". And that's how tall I was when I got my license. So I was a super late bloomer. And so when I grew up playing, I had to learn play with the big boys at the Havard School, going against Chris Sabia as a freshman when I was on. I sometimes swing up to varsity practices, but I was on JV for 2 years. So I was learning and developing my skills as a smaller guy, playing a lot of off ball, developing my stick skills, hitting the wall every day, stuff like that. And then when I finally started to grow, I think I was able to become more of a dodger and be able to distribute the ball more versus playing just off ball. So I think that was a big part of the reason why I turned into the player I am today, just my journey being a late bloomer.
My license still says, well, it's not 5'4", but it's close. So at least you got a little taller.
TJ, the Nittany Lions are 7-1. You're ranked number 4 in the IL media poll this week, and you have wins over two top 10 teams. Yet, as you mentioned, it feels like Penn State's sort of flying under the radar a little bit so far in 2024. Who are some of the unsung heroes of the Penn State lacrosse team that, if people haven't seen you play yet, people should know about?
Oh man, we have so many. I would say some of the big guys are our guys on defense right now. Joe Scarfe, Will Costin, Alex Ross, right now the starting defense. I don't know what I don't really look into the rankings too much, but I'm sure they're a top 10 defense. I mean, led by Frack and Cage. He is a hero, but I wouldn't say he's an unsung hero. So I mean, what he does is incredible, and it gives the defense so much confidence. So I would say our starting defense core is just doing phenomenal right now. Also, our LSM, Sam Sweeney and Ryan O'Connor have really stepped up this year into awesome roles. Working on the faceoff X, our wings have been amazing this year, really getting every single ground ball. So that's been huge. And we've really taken a strides in the right direction for that. And our faceoff unit, Chase Mullins and Colby Baldwin, are working really well together, giving us the ball a whole lot more. So that's been awesome. And then offense, I mean, Jake Morin, he had the game-winning goal versus Yale. He always flies underneath the radar because he always just does the right thing. He dodges and he moves it, and he does his role amazingly. And it doesn't always mean he's going to have 5 or 6 goals a game, but our offense wouldn't run without guys like him. And also Will Peden, has been a big staple for us at attack. And he's just super consistent in the way he plays, is very unselfish, always looking to get the team open, has a great vision. So, and then also Matt Costin's been huge. He's stepped up tremendously. And he's one of my best friends, another Havard School guy. So seeing him step up into a much more leadership role too this year has been really cool to see. him being a lot more vocal and him caring so much just about winning. And I think we just have a bunch of guys that really just care about the end goal, which is winning and winning championships. And I think we're all moving towards that direction right now.
Sunday night, you guys welcome the Maryland Terrapins into Panzer Stadium. We'll have the game myself, Joe Beninati, on Big Ten Network. Panzermonium, what is the best way to describe the vibe, the atmosphere at Panzer when students show up and that place gets going?
It's gonna be a fun weekend this weekend, especially the Drake concert. Drake's coming to the Bryce Jordan Center, which is right next to our field, and he's performing Sunday night. So there'll be a lot of people in the vicinity, so that there'll be extra buzz around just because people will be walking to the concert. They'll pass by our stadium, hopefully stop in, you know, catch a quarter or a half or whatever. So I mean, Panzermonium itself, they're loyal. They're with us when we're good and versus when we're bad. So we really appreciate their support. And we got one of the best stadiums in the country. So I would love to see that thing packed on Sunday night.
I got the notice or saw the tweet about a concert at Bryce Jordan. They didn't say it was Drake.
Yep.
So yeah, I was planning on getting there like by 6. I might have to get there by like 4.
So I don't think
the 7 o'clock. Yeah, geez, he whizzed.
Later, I don't think the concert's around 8 or 9. So you should be good. But yeah, it's a big one. We one of my teammates actually just DM'd Drake and asked him to sing at the national anthem. So we'll see if he answers.
That's great.
That would be epic.
So Sunday night is a big game. The atmosphere should be amazing at Panzer. What do the Nittany Lions need to do to get a win against the Terps?
Maryland doesn't beat themselves, so we're going to have to not beat ourselves either. I think that was a big thing. Last year, we went down to Maryland, and coach was harping all week, we cannot beat ourselves. This team is beatable if we do not beat ourselves. And what we did exactly the opposite. We beat ourselves. We had a lot of offensive turnovers, gave up a lot of goals in transition. Stuff that we could have controlled, we did not control. So I think the big thing this year is, how can we not beat ourselves? How can we be the team to beat versus Maryland? Because Maryland's been the team to beat for so long, and they have such an amazing program. So how can we, you know, be the team to beat, make them beat us versus us beat ourselves?
All right. You ready for some quick hitters?
Sure.
All right. First thing that pops in your head here. All-time favorite Philadelphia athlete.
My first thing that pops in my mind is Jalen Hurts, but I could also go Rocky on that one.
Classic. So if Dixie or I walked into the Penn State locker room randomly, what song would we most likely hear playing?
There's a big EDM song right now called Original Sin that our team's been loving. And so that's on all the time. I think we're actually walking out to that one on Sunday night.
Nice. What's your favorite road venue to play in?
I love playing at home so much, but I think the Link. I mean, that was I played there twice, and that was amazing both times, especially being a Philly fan. And the grass there is amazing, so it just feels like you're flying.
Who's the funniest guy on the Penn State lacrosse team?
There's a few guys, but one that pops into my mind is Matt Lazaro, sophomore.
What's your favorite Taylor Swift song?
I don't know. I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan, but
great answer.
we ask everybody this.
What's our song?
Okay.
Or Romeo and Juliet. One of those. I don't know.
What's the best food or dish that you make? What's your go-to in the kitchen?
A nice steak on the grill. That's probably my go-to.
TikTok or Instagram?
I don't have a TikTok, and so Instagram.
Best road meal or team dinner spot that you guys go to on the road?
Oh, the boys on the team, we love chicken parm. So we'll sometimes when we'll travel, say we're going to Philly, the trainers live right off the road, right off the highway. So we'll go to their house sometimes before games, and other people's houses before games. So they always got chicken parm for us, and so it's been a running joke on our team. Anywhere we go, if we have chicken parm, we'll be good.
Last season, Dixie and I talked to Coach Tambroni, and he recommended a place called Gigi's. and State College. Have you ever been there? And is it good?
I actually went there a few weeks ago, and it is good, really good food. I actually, the waitress left her number for me after, so that was a nice little plus. So that was the first time it's ever happened, but I was like, I'll take it. That's fun.
All right, I got two more questions for you. Who makes the best Philly cheesesteak?
D'Alessandro's.
And finally, what would winning a national championship in Philadelphia at the Link mean to you?
It would mean the world. I mean, that is the reason I came back to Penn State, with that one goal in mind. And it's just everything this year and the summer leading up to it, in the fall and this season, has just been dedicated to that goal. So, our team sacrificed a lot, and so in order to, it would just mean so much. I've envisioned this moment a lot. Just looking at my teammates after that, and seeing the smiles on everybody's faces, on the coaches' faces, on the fans' faces, of my teammates' faces, and it makes me emotional, because I it would mean the world. So I truly believe it can happen. So I think my first reaction would just be the job is finished, like the Kobe Bryant thing, when he would always say, "Job's not finished." So that's how I feel right now. And then once hopefully, when we're hosting that champion trophy, we can just say the job is finished. We did everything we could, and we did it.
TJ, thank you so much for joining us on the DeFly and Dixie podcast, and best of luck to you and the Nittany Lions this week and throughout the season.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate it.
TJ is an impressive kid.
Very much so. Met him last year at national semifinals, doing radio for Westwood One, and just a funny guy, great personality, hell of a player too.
Yeah, just it's great to talk to these student athletes when they're just relaxed, and also gave some great answers.
I love the fact too that they're really appreciative to be on the show, which I think that shows that, like, we got more listeners than we think.
Speaking of viewers and listeners, Dix, this Hopkins Rutgers game we did last Sunday was the second most viewed NCAA lacrosse game of the year. And it went up against Sunday March Madness games. It's really impressive. And it's the most viewed NCAA lacrosse telecast in March since the pandemic.
Yeah, pretty cool. Quickstick blog, at Quickstick blog on Twitter, I guess X now. I still call it Twitter,
Still
but
Twitter.
they posted that. Look, the Sunday games have been very successful. This one was at 4:30 on Big Ten Network. It was myself and Pete Medhurst called the game. We kick off Sunday night on BTN this coming Sunday, 7 o'clock, from Panzer Stadium. Those games do really, really well. And this is Easter Sunday. The Easter Sunday game, it's been a couple of years since we've done them, but we get a lot of eyeballs. So I think that, this Rutgers Hopkins game, look, it's Hopkins. Hopkins is involved, and the Blue Jay faithful tune in and watch the games. And Rutgers has an incredible following too. So really, really proud of that number, and really thank everybody for watching. It's great.
Yeah, so a 4:30 Sunday game, and
Yeah.
then was the second best of the season after that Syracuse Maryland game that was in a night game in February. Again, if you don't put all the games at noon, fans can go find like these marquee matchups. I love it. I think you're going to have huge ratings on Sunday night. I'm looking forward to watching that.
Let's make that game. Maryland at Penn State. It's March 31st, so it's still March. Let's make that the most viewed March game.
Hear what you're doing there. I like it. A reminder that the DeFly and Dixie podcast is presented by Simplicity Group. And now it's time to get to our top 20 matchups and preview the week ahead. Dixie, on Saturday, March 30th, it kicks off with a pretty interesting game. Number six Army, former number one team in the country, lost to BU last Friday. We'll go down to Chapel Hill to take on North Carolina, who's 6-3 now after their loss to High Point This is a really important game for both of these teams. And I think really for North Carolina, a turning point in their season, it could be.
So Friday night, I was in my hotel room in Ann Arbor watching this Army BU game, and BU looked terrific. Army looked a little bit out of sorts. A player from BU got injured, and the game was stopped for an extended period. And ambulance had to come out, medical personnel had to come out. The announcers did say when the young man was being taken off the field that he was moving and giving thumbs up and that kind of thing. So that was awesome news. But when something like that happens, that can really throw off your focus and throw off, your mojo. And credit to BU for continuing to play good lacrosse afterward, knocked off Army. Another number one goes down. And then the next day, North Carolina High Point, the Heels had a lead going into the fourth quarter, I think 4 or 5 goals, and High Point just played loose. They played fast, and they took advantage and got their first win ever in Chapel Hill. So you're exactly right. This is a big weekend for both of these ball clubs, but more importantly, I think for North Carolina to get some home cooking, right the ship, get back on a solid path, because after this game against the Black Knights, they've got the ACC slate staring them right in the face. So they're really going to have to put it together. And then for Army, another opportunity to go on the road. Should be a great weather this weekend in Chapel Hill. So should be a good game between two teams looking to rebound in a big way.
Yeah, and for Army, it's a chance to get a quality non-conference win that before they get into just Patriot League action, and will help them when in at-large consideration later if they need it. Moving on to another non-conference game, number 2 Virginia will go to Boston to play number 16 Harvard. Virginia's 8-1, Harvard 6-2. This game will also be at noon.
So that game's at Harvard, huh?
Yeah, that's what
Oh,
I
wow.
see.
Cavaliers going up north. Interesting. I wasn't aware of the location. Virginia really playing good lacrosse right now. Followed up their win against Maryland with two wins, one against Albany, one against Drexel. So no hangover, no let up for Virginia. Such a balanced offense. Harvard has dropped two in a row, and they're looking to rebound. And wow, what an opportunity for the Crimson to host the University of Virginia. I think that should draw a pretty big crowd into Cambridge. And two, to get a quality out of conference win in this Ivy League that has really become a slugfest, an offensive slugfest amongst the teams vying for that Ivy League postseason tournament. That game should be on ESPN Plus, right?
Should be all the Ivy League
Yeah.
games.
Yeah. And then the Army Carolina game should be ACC Network Extra, I believe.
So you can stream both of those games, both
Stream
at
both of
noon.
them, yeah.
You can do the multi view, watch them both at
Right.
the same time. But there's another game at noon that's on ESPNU, and that's a Big Ten matchup between number 14 Michigan and number 8 Johns Hopkins. These teams are both 6-3, both 1-0 in the Big 10, and first place on the line in the Big Ten.
Michigan, very comfortable at Homewood Field, won the Big Ten tournament last year there. And Kevin Conroy, their head coach, is a Blue Jay graduate, 2004. And this is a Michigan team that's a big win. I was really impressed with their resilience this past weekend against Maryland. And the one thing that really stood out to me was they've got a face-off guy that could stand up to Luke Wehrman. You knew Wehrman was going to get hot. You knew he was going to be a key component to the Terps. And Justin Wheatfelt, with a little bit of help from Jackie Weller, a talented freshman, won big faceoffs at critical moments that Maryland in recent memory has won in the fourth quarter. So Michigan comes in with momentum, as does Hopkins. They knock off Rutgers. They got out to an early lead. Rutgers fought back. Rutgers went zone. Hopkins really struggled. Welcome back, Russell Melendez. Two huge goals in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, Dix, I remember, I think I heard in the broadcast you're saying that he has just hasn't been scoring a lot. You know, he's on the field a lot for the Blue Jays, but just hasn't been a key element of the offense. And it was great to see him score some significant goals, and hopefully that can get him going.
No doubt. And they weren't getting anything from that side of the field. And he had been running out of the box for the last couple of games. Jays put him back at attack, and he delivered at a moment where Hopkins needed him to make plays, and he did it. So that bodes well. Should be a really, really good game on ESPNU this Saturday.
In the Ivy League with first place on the line. Number seven, Cornell, go to Philadelphia to take on the number 15 ranked Penn Quakers at 1 o'clock. You can see this on ESPN Plus. Both of these teams are 2-0 in the Ivy League, although you could argue about the strength of schedule of the two teams that they faced.
I think the big test right now, though, is and the measuring stick is Cornell is 2-0 in the conference after beating Princeton and Yale. Penn, pretty healthy out of conference schedule. They beat Dartmouth in a winter wonderland
Oh
last
my
weekend.
gosh, that was amazing. I flipped to that game. I couldn't. So I was watching a different game and it was pouring rain. And I was like, man, I'm glad I'm not at that game because it's the weather's terrible. And I flipped to that game at halftime and well, I could have been, I could be, might be in New Hampshire. That would be even a lot worse. It
Yeah, so
just
when that game
wasn't.
was going on, I was watching Loyola Lafayette. That was terrible weather. It was a driving rainstorm in eastern Pennsylvania. But then I had to go back and watch some of the Penn Dartmouth game simply. And LIU Siena was similar
Yeah,
weather.
blizzard
But
conditions.
kudos to so the guys that were broadcasting that game on ESPN Plus were really cool and really funny and entertaining. And shout out to the camera guys. The snow was building up on the camera, and those guys didn't even care. They were just taking their hands and like wiping it off. I love it. It was great. Because so many times when you're on the air, even if it's just a stream, you're like, oh, cut away and then clean the camera off. The dude was just like, no, man, like right now, like, this is my shot. Orange ball was utilized, but wow, the footing, the everything was crazy in that game. Penn might be the best defensive team in the Ivy League. They'll be put to the test against Cornell that can score goals in bunches. This will be it'll be an Ivy League game. What are we talking about? I mean, teams are going to go after each other. They're going to be physical and fun, and we'll see who wins. Will the defense prevail on this day, or will the offense of Cornell get things done?
You think this is a 17-15 game, or do you think it's more like a
I'm going to say
12-10 game?
11-9. It's
11-9.
more like
Okay.
an 11-9. Whoever can get the double digit is going to win.
All right. And probably the biggest game of the day, number three, Syracuse, will be in South Bend to take on the number one ranked Notre Dame Fighting Irish in an ACC matchup at 2 o'clock on the ACC network.
Well, how about the Orange riding high, knocking off Hopkins, knocking off Duke, and then they held serve going on the road to Geneva, New York, beating Hobart in a game that's always emotional and entertaining. And I don't know if the Hobart fans still throw fish at the Syracuse Orange or not, but this is a Syracuse team that's really, we talk about their offense all the time. Their defense is doing a tremendous job. Billy Dwan, I think, is emerging as a star out of Loyola Blakefield, son of Bill Dwan. He's doing a great job. Will Mark was actually on a little bit of shaky ground going into the Hopkins game, and had a great game against Hopkins, had another great game against Duke. And I think he's, not only, it's kind of funny when, because you think about a guy who's an All-American caliber goaltender being on shaky ground and having a short leash, and he responded by having a great effort against Hopkins. Going up against a Notre Dame team that is always tough at home. I mean, they're always tough regardless of where you play them. So this Syracuse defense is going to be put to the test, and face-offs, I think, will be critical in this game. Who can establish the tempo? Who can get more quality possessions? Who can get more quality shots? Because, we mentioned Will Mark in cage for Syracuse, Liam Entman manning the pipes for Notre Dame, one of the best in the business, first team All-American from a year ago. So tremendous ACC matchup on tap.
So lots of good games on Saturday. And there's one key game on Sunday that the whole nation is going to focus their attention on Sunday night before Drake takes the stage at the Bryce Jordan Center.
I can't believe it's Drake. I mean, I thought for sure it would be some country bumpkin or maybe EDM or something. And Drake? I mean, he's one of the – I don't listen to Drake. I think other than Hotline Bling, I couldn't name one Drake song. But he's like one – he's like top five right now superstars in the world, isn't he?
You better get parked early for that game, my man. Number 12, Maryland. They need a win. They're 5-3, 0-1 in the Big Ten. I can't imagine. Have they ever started 0-2 in the Big Ten season?
Not that I can remember.
We'll take on the number 4 ranked Penn State Nittany Lions, 7-1 overall, 1-0 in the Big Ten at 7 o'clock on the Big Ten Network.
Yeah, so where else would you rather be than on Easter night with me and Joe Beninati from the comfort of your own home?
Or is come out to Panthers.
Come what?
Is that a real question?
I'll stop it.
I'm just kidding.
I know you're going to be watching.
I will be watching this game.
We'll pipe down over there. Where else would you rather be this Easter Sunday night than in front of your television watching Penn State Maryland on Big Ten Network? Where else would you rather be?
I don't know. I want to be at home. That's for sure.
Feasibly.
Yes. Yes. I want to be at home.
All right. So stop it. Okay.
back to the preview.
This will be a great game. And this one always cracks me up between the two programs. According to Penn State, they've beaten Maryland, I think, 3 times. According to Maryland, they've only beaten them once. And that was in 2019, the year that Penn State came to College Park, the year they went to their first national semifinal. So I think going into this game, Penn State's the favorite. And it's kind of funny how things have worked out. When we saw the preseason rankings for the Big Ten, Hopkins was 1, Penn State 2, Michigan 3, Maryland 4. And that's how it's trending, you know, right now. You know, Maryland's a team that I think unfairly is being compared to the 2022 team, which right now is incomparable for not just Maryland, but for any college lacrosse program. I mean, that was a once every 20, 25 years kind of team, just a complete unit, wire to wire, undefeated national champions. That being said, Maryland, some of the goals that they scored against Michigan were highlight reel type goals. A.J. Larkin, pole goal, his first career goal. Maltz made 2 incredible plays, a shoestring catch shot with a short shot clock, and then he made a feed off of his back to Syracuse. But you know, Maryland just doesn't have that kind of alpha male right now, the way Penn State does. You know, TJ Malone is an alpha male. And then what Penn State's been able to do defensively without Jack Posey, you know, a player that I'm really impressed with is Alex Ross, a sophomore. And then, of course, Jack Frassion between the pipes. This will be a great game. You know, you got the Panzer faithful will be there in the shadow of the Bryce Jordan Center where Drake will be spitting fire. So should be a great night in State College.
Yeah, so find out where you're going to watch all these games and make your plans now. All right, Dixie, it's time for our give and go. And I watched your broadcast of the Maryland-Penn women's game on Wednesday night with the family. My wife was a Penn, former captain of the Penn Quakers, a lacrosse player.
And you guys didn't come down to the game?
We were planning on it, but the weather didn't really pan out. And we were going to bring the HOCO Flamingos 2032 team and families, but we wisely called it off when you told me that you were broadcasting the game.
Yeah. Well, hey, so we had you covered. So
we caught the Big Ten broadcast. Great win for the Quakers. Really impressive.
Wow, how impressive were they?
They were
against the number one team in the country, Maryland, who was on a roll of their own.
And I was a little surprised by that. But the most surprising thing of the entire broadcast, whole night, was during a timeout late in the game, Maryland entered stadium people, the marketing people, start playing Come On, Feel the Noise by Quiet Riot, pump up the crowd.
Great tune.
Great tune. You come back from a commercial. I think you mentioned something about Quiet Riot, and Taylor Cummings had no idea what you were talking about. And then you even said, you realized it, said, oh, you don't know who this is, do you? And she said, no, as if she'd never. So she went to Maryland. She played there. This song's been around for decades. I'm sure while she was playing, they probably played this. Probably has been like part of their, like a traditional Maryland women's lacrosse song. But she's probably heard it somewhere else. Right? Like, I don't understand how she didn't know that song. I remember one time I was in like a beach bar with some coworkers, and Meatloaf song comes on, you know, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, a song that that bar had probably played a million times. And someone who I was with, she went to that bar regularly. Like, she's an Ocean City kind of girl. And she was saying she'd never heard the song. And I'm like, I don't believe you. Like, you may not have been paying attention, but I'm sure they play this like every Saturday night, at least once. And they've been doing it for 30 years. So it just blows my mind. So it made me start thinking about stadium music. First of all, I want to get your reaction to when Taylor was just like, what are you talking about?
Okay. In fairness to Taylor, she's very in tune to music. Before the game, when we're both preparing and going through pre-production and that kind of thing, every song that Maryland was playing in their warm-up jam, she was singing along to. So she knows music. I'm sure she has heard Come On, Feel the Noise in her lifetime and recognizes the song. She probably just doesn't know that it's Quiet Riot. So when we came back from break and I heard, and I'm like, I was listening to the song, and then we came back from break and I'm like, oh yeah, a little Quiet Riot. And I look over and she didn't say anything. And I go, you don't know who Quiet Riot is, do you? So that was pretty funny.
It was funny.
Taylor's very in tune to music. She very, very much in tune to music. New mom as well. She has a 6-month-old home. So yeah, congratulations to cool. her and her husband. She's married to Greg Danseglio, played at Virginia, then transferred to Maryland, a defenseman, terrific player. So anyway, it was great to hear that song.
It was.
That's a great tune, man. That takes me back to, you know, one of my first, when I had Vinyl Wolf, I had the Mental Health album. I remember getting that for Christmas one year and played the heck out of that thing.
So it made me start thinking about stadium songs, songs that you hear during a game, and then walk-up songs or goal songs after you score a goal. I think we've talked about, you and I, like off the air a couple times about this, but I want to bring this up. I have that in my house. When a song comes on the radio or you hear, you know, in the speaker in the kitchen or something like that, we have our family walk-up songs. You know, whether you're walking up to the plate in baseball or after you score a goal in lacrosse or whatever sport you play, or, you know, in wrestling, you know, there might be a walk-up song. I want to know what yours are, and then I can give you some of mine, because I know you have one and your kids probably have them too.
Yeah. So when I was at Wagner a couple weeks ago, watching Carolina play Wagner during timeouts, I was talking to other people, so I wasn't paying attention, but there was one where I was like, wait a second. It's the entrance theme for Cody Rhodes in the WWE, the American Nightmare. So anybody that knows wrestling knows the Rhodes family. Dusty Rhodes, his father, the American Dream. And then his brother, Dustin Rhodes, the Natural, who had most success as a character called Gold Dust. Remember Gold Dust? You remember Gold Dust?
No.
Oh, Gold Dust was awesome. So now you have the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. And then later in the game, they played Real American, which was the walk-up song for Hulk Hogan. You've heard Real American.
I have. I know that song.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I love wrestling. Stone Cold Steve Austin, the glass shattering, Pomp and Circumstance, Randy Macho Man Savage. Yeah, so walk-up songs. It depends on what you're in the mood for. Because sometimes you want to go hip-hop. Sometimes you want to go rock, heavy metal. I would have to say Thunderstruck from AC/DC is always a great one.
That's a good one.
Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes. Yeah, that kind of anthem. If you're thinking of like hip hop or, you know, kind of rap, Beastie Boys are always good. Make Some Noise is a good one. Yeah, so those are like top three that I would come off the top of my head.
All right, so I'll go with my family's. So my son Bennett, Ready For It by Taylor Swift. And when it plays in the car, we even have to do like the part where
I love songs like Taylor Swift.
it's the part where we have to do like now batting for the Baltimore Orioles, number 31, Bennett Flynn. But we have to time it just right. And he just thinks it's the greatest thing in the world. He just, oh my God. I'm the PA announcer and I spot it up for him. My daughter's is it changes all the time. It's gonna be a Taylor song, but it's I Knew You Were Trouble when you walked in. She wants to hear that when she scores a goal. By the way, Hannah Flynn, 7 goals in her first NGLL game of the season last Sunday.
Wow, congrats.
So I asked my wife, and she said, "Poison." Guess her Poison song.
By Belle Biv DeVoe?
No. A song by the band Poison.
A song by the band Poison. Every rose has its thorn.
No, it's nothing
Oh,
but a good time.
that's funny.
Which I've asked her before, and that is the song that she selected, and she said told me that again this morning. And then mine is Pearl Jam, Alive, the
Okay.
opening guitar riff of Alive. That's mine. I want to hear yours because I know you got one. I know your boys have them, right?
Matt does have one. They play goals. They play music when you score a goal at home with Loyola. He's never scored a goal at Loyola. Their first career goal actually
Yeah.
last week for Matt Dixon against Lafayette. So
Congrats.
yeah, really proud of him.
Congratulations.
First goal of the game for Loyola. I really don't have one.
Oh, you're ruining this segment. You got to just come up with one song.
Ace of Spades, Motorhead.
Okay. All
How
right.
about that? Taylor Swift songs. Holy smokes.
Two of them. Yeah. Two of them.
Wow. We gotta get your kids, at least Bennett, we gotta get him listening to some harder music, some
I have a
funky.
10-year-old daughter who dominates the speakers in our car whenever we go on a family trip. She just
I can see that.
sometimes before we leave the driveway, it's can I DJ? Can I be the D to the J or something funny that she'll say? And I have to just hand my phone back to her and be like, okay, go right ahead. I know what you're gonna play. So sometimes I just have to tell her to mix up the Taylor Swift and not play just the whole album straightforward.
Oh my God.
That seems like a good place to stop. Big thanks to our guests this week, TJ Malone. Best of luck to you and your Penn State teammates this week and throughout the season. A reminder that the D-Flying Dixie podcast is proudly brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We'll be here all season if you like what you heard. Give us a like on your favorite podcast app, leave a review, subscribe, tell a friend, and share the love. It's free. Come on, give this thing away. We always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.